I'm not much of a talker.
It's okay.
Okay, so this is Tuesday, the 13th of March, 2012, and I'm in the home of Gordon and Mary Bickerton at 262 St. George Street in Sussex, New Brunswick. And Gordon's a Second World War veteran, and both Gordon and Mary have a long association with the 8th Brunswick Hussars. They have a long, they have a special place in the Hussar story, not only because of this long affiliation with the regiment, but also because you, Mary, were the caretaker of the regimental mascot, Princess Louise.
Right.
So thank you for inviting me into your home.
No problem. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I thought that we would, as I mentioned earlier, I thought that we would do the interview in three parts. So I thought I'd learn a little bit more about you and Mary and your time in England and overseas. And then the second part would be about Princess Louise. And I thought that we would end off with one of the greatest proponents for the regiment and a very able and memorable commander, Lieutenant Colonel Bob Ross.
Right.
So I'd like to know more about him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I first met Bob Ross. I was living at Berwick. I had an old truck and I was hauling logs and pulpwood.
Right.
And one of the lieutenants, Lieutenant Dave Knox from the 8th Hussars, he actually lived next door to where we are right now, was their home. And he used to come with his Jeep and take me fishing. And he said, you're a good mechanic. He said, why don't you see Colonel Ross and see if you couldn't get a job doing the mechanic work on the tanks and the trucks.
Right.
Well, he said, yeah, I suppose I could give it a try. So I went in one morning, and Ross was sitting at his desk on Broad Street. He was selling Renfrew separators.
Okay.
So he took me into his office, and he asked me a few questions about mechanics. And I said, yes. He said, well, I think I'll hire you. So, good. I said, well, now I got to few things I have to clear up before it could come. Probably it'd be a week before it could come. Oh, he said, I gotta have you right away. Oh, well, okay. He said, we got a big scheme coming off. We're gonna have airplanes and tanks and everything, and we want to get the vehicles going. He said, they're all sitting around in the tank hangar and hardly any of them will go. So I started, and there was five Sherman tanks, two Ram tanks, and two Honey tanks. And I worked on them a bit and kept them working. And at least four out of six is sold. And then there was trucks sitting around the floor with flat tires and everything else. So I worked away and I got most everything going, with the exception of two or three vehicles. And they had this big crates, the big flypass, and the planes dropped a little pound bag of flour, and if it hit the tank, that tank
was exploded.
Commission.
Yeah.
And who was it? Van Duz was their enemy, the French. Oh, what a day that was.
Now this was after.
You had a lot of fun. Yeah, it was so much like the real old war thing, you know. It's pretty good.
Now, you didn't work on engines, though, during the war? You were...
No, I didn't, but I took a few little courses on mechanics while I was over there in my spare time with the... it was with the Canadians. I was thinking it was with the British, but it wasn't. It was Canadian grads. I used to go down to the grads there and black down. And I got to know quite a bit about the workings of an engine and whatnot.
You just had a natural inclination for mechanics.
Yeah, well, when I came back, it was 1948 when I joined up with them here in Sussex. And I looked after the tanks and the trucks for close to 25 years. And then I bought the old sergeant's mess, and I moved half of it out the camp gate and made a grudge. Uh-huh. And I was there for 24
wow.
years.
Wow. Yeah. Long while.
Yeah, quite a spell.
Now, so
and now I wonder how I ever did those things. I used to take the engines all apart, replace the engine, crankshafts with pistons. And
all by yourself? You'd have to get a crane to lift the engine out? Or?
Yeah, we had a crane. Yeah.
So was that the whole complement of the armored fighting vehicles that the regiment had after the war? The five or six Shermans and the Rams?
Yeah. And they had 23 B vehicles, which was the draft vehicles, cars and trucks.
Right.
23 of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just going back before the war, so you joined up, and I guess it was the service corps that you joined up with.
I joined up the 3rd of March, 1941, in St. John, and they sent me to Fredericton for basic training. I was there for 6 weeks, I believe, mm-hmm. and then they sent me on to Camp Borden, Ontario, for further training. And when I finished that, they posted me to Halifax, and they gave me an old truck to drive there, ammunition truck. Mm-hmm. I hauled ammunition and all sorts of stuff around there for a little while, and one day the sergeant came to me, he said, "I want you to drive for a colonel." So I started driving, and that's why I got the job of chauffeur over when I got to England, I don't know. So I did that. I met Mary on one of my trips to London, and met her at Trafalgar Square.
Oh, I've been there.
Have you?
Yes.
Yeah. And I had a friend, his name was Castle. What was his first name?
Harry Castle.
Yeah.
Harry Castle. I was up to London for the weekend. And we were just mulling around, and we both smoked. And we flicked the cigarette butts in the ducks and ponds in Trafalgar Square. And these two girls came along, and they said, it was just terrible. I was throwing cigarette butts at the ducks. Well, we get into quite a little talk there, and after a bit, said, well, let's go for a walk. So we went for a little walk. I don't know where it was. Up the Strand or somewhere. Maybe Mary remembers. Anyway, I had to go to the washroom, and the washrooms were underground. So we both went down one side, the girl was around the other side, they went down and did the same thing. So while we were down there, Harry said, I don't like the girl I get. I said, I don't fuss about the one I get either. She said, what do you say we trade? So we went back and we asked about trading, and they were all for it. And Mary got the worst
of it.
Mary got the worst of the deal, I think. Because the girl, Joan, what's her name, Joan? Remember her?
Joan Hamilton.
Yeah. She married a movie star from Hollywood.
Yeah.
So she didn't settle down with the guy that she met, not your friend, but she found somebody else.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I think Mary came out on the bad end of the stick.
I was looking for Dorothy Dearborn's book. Have you seen that, The Little Princess?
I haven't. This is the children's book about the Princess Louise?
Yeah.
I've heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
No, I had one. I must have lent it to Trish to take to school to show the kids. And I don't know where it went after that.
Maybe the museum has
didn't
a copy.
Come back.
I can see.
We went to the launching of that in Hampton.
How long ago was that?
Ooh. 5 or 6 years
ago? 25
years? She and her daughter worked together on Anna Watts. She's the editor of the Anglican Journal now.
So, just getting back to the war, like you joined in 1941. So, what motivated you to join?
Well, I had this old truck. I was hauling stuff into St. John, and I was coming back out of St. John, coming up through Hampton. The dry shaft dropped right out of her. She was such a bad shape. So I guess I jugged to get the thing back home, and I sold it for little or nothing. And I went and I joined the Army. I said,
man, employment.
I needed a good
job.
Yeah, I needed a job.
Dad was born in England, but came to Canada as a teenager, farmed out west, joined the Army, wounded at Vimy. When he was convalescing in Derbyshire, in Nottingham, he met Amy, the mother.
Yeah.
So they were married, and they came to Canada in 1920.
I was just, I think, 6 weeks old when I landed in this country.
Amy used to say it was very tempting to open that porthole somehow. So we repeated history.
Yes. So your mom and your wife were both war brides. Wow.
Yeah.
So what was it like to be in London during the war?
Loud.
Yeah.
We were very lucky. I was in school, and we would go to shelter quite often, and then they realized it was getting the airtime for matrix. So we used to just go in under the desk for a while. And one glorious German pilot dropped delayed action bombs on our school. 4 days off, lovely.
Good job on the school.
But much later on, maybe it was the same man, dropped a landmine on our street. It looked just like a sea mine with the horns and so on all over. And we had to be very careful till the team came and disarmed it. My grandmother was staying with us at the time. And first they wanted us in the front so they could work at the back and then vice versa. Why are we going back and forth like this? And we never did explain it to her. Came down on this beautiful, beautiful blue parachute. And it was divided up afterwards. Blue underwear all up and down the street.
So you met on this occasion, and then that was the beginning of a more permanent relationship. So were you married in England, or?
Oh yes, we were married.
20th
November 1943.
Now, did you always serve in England, or were you also over on the continent?
Oh, I was over on the continent too. Yeah. I went over a couple of weeks after D-Day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the capacity of a chauffeur and driving brigadiers around.
Driving Brigadier Ginelli then. He was a Italian, but he was in the Canadian Army. Actually, he was the mayor of Toronto at one time. I drove him.
I'd go to visit Gordon and I'd see this flag car coming down the street, and the brigadier would wave like this, and this would ignore me. Not allowed to look sideways.
Took your job pretty seriously.
Before him, I drove Brigadier Rutherford. He was from Owen Sound, Ontario.
He was something to do with the Land Act after the war, wasn't he?
Yes, I think he did, He was one time sheriff of what did they say? Is it Oshawa? No.
Owen Sound?
Owen Sound.
Okay.
Was it Owen Sound?
Yeah.
So now, after the war, you had a long affiliation with Camp Sussex. So what did you do in the camp after the war? So you were hired by Colonel Ross to be
mechanic. To do the mechanics. And at night time, I was a soldier at night time, and then the mechanic paid by the government, civil service job. They didn't pay me very much. I think after 13 years, I was getting $1.75 an hour. Ain't that awful? After 13 years, they wanted me to go to Gagetown, but Colonel McLeod talked me into buying a house down here, when he was with the BLA, the Veterans Land Act. So I bought this nice house.
Small holding. Yeah. We had to have some animals. The boys were quite happy to collect eggs and chase the rabbits. And
yeah, it was a big house. It had 5 bedrooms, all hardwood floors. It was a good house. I don't think it had been lived in 1 year, I think, by the people who had it built. And it was Cagers. It was built the year we got married. Mm-hmm. In 1943. Oh. So when I come back, it's 48 when I get back. I think it must have been 49 when I bought the house there.
Pardon?
What year did I buy the house in?
53.
53, was it? Yeah. So long ago, I can't remember.
Well, it was long ago. It was, 60-some years ago.
Yeah.
So Mary, you were also, you were working in the orderly room?
We moved into camp. They gave us quarters in camp. And it hadn't been there very long. They asked if I'd like to work in the orderly room, which I did and enjoyed. Until, in those days, there were 700 and some men on strength. And they each got the Part 1 orders by mail every time. So there was no excuse not to know what you're supposed to be doing. Then rumor had it that the Black Watch Depot was moving in, which turned out to be true. But they came two years before they were expected, so those of us in quarters had to get out. And after paying $15 a month for the quarters, the heat, cooking, which was cold, and everything else except the telephone, we moved downtown, and how on earth are we going to pay $45 for plus, we managed somehow.
Yeah, you always do, eh? No matter what, it just magically seems to happen, no matter
We seem to get through just the same.
It was a great place for the boys. They had vehicles to play with. Michael climbed up one end of the tang hanger, walked along the roof, and didn't have the nerve to get back on the ladder to come down. One of the...
Michael's your son.
The older one.
The oldest.
I said, why did you climb up the ladder here? And I didn't. I climbed up the other end and walked along the roof.
That must have been exciting times. So many different soldiers in the camp.
Same son. It was a storage hut, like a warehouse on the railhead. He fell off the ramp onto the line and cut his head open. It was very interesting around there.
There's a whole stream of warehouses, and the rail came in, and we were at the very end one. And we lived in one half, but the other half was wide open. They used to play hockey in there and everything.
The little vehicles.
Yeah.
It's a good spot.
And you could open the big door at the end, and there's a big long ramp, and they could run along the ramp with the bikes. And
a fun place to grow up in.
It was a great place to bring up kids, for sure.
You had three kids?
Yes.
Three?
Yeah. Two boys, both retired Mounties.
Yeah.
And a daughter works at the school. They call them educational assistants now. Not allowed to say teacher's aides anymore.
Right.
It's incorrect.
But it's the same job, pretty much.
You're a teacher also?
I'm a technical trainer. So I don't have a teacher's degree, but I work for a software security company called Entrust. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a trainer with them, and it involves some travel. So the week after next, I'm going to be down teaching in the UK. Usually the courses will just run about a week. Mm-hmm. And so, teach the students how to install and configure the software and how to use the software. Yeah, so that keeps me busy. I do the courseware development, so I develop the courses, and I do the teaching, and I am also doing the administration.
Well, I guess you're busy.
So, yeah, we used to have 20 people in the department. Now I'm the only one.
Oh, my
goodness.
I'm kept pretty busy.
I guess you are.
All that.
Yeah.
Just pulling now, one of our granddaughters is a Mountie, too.
That yes, I see that, yeah. And she's nearby in Grand Falls,
I think she's coming home this weekend. She's got 5 days off. We're talking to her on the phone this morning.
She's busy. Hmm?
Were we talking to her this morning?
Yes. My mother and father came down with this flu bug that's rampant around here.
Yeah.
And she called in great alarm. She heard they were sick, and what could we do about it? Was nothing. They're scared to let them near us, or for us to go do anything to help them. And that'd be the end of both of us, I think. It sounds like a very virulent dose.
Norwalk virus.
Yeah. Yes.
Bad strand of the stomach flu. Going back to Princess Louise, I know you weren't there when Princess Louise was found, but do you remember the story of how she was found?
Well, yeah, it was after the Battle of Falaise, I think. No, not Falaise.
Carignano.
Carignano. After the Battle of Carignano, one of our tanks was knocked out, and our mechanics, the next day or so afterwards, after the business had gone on beyond, they went out to recover the tank, and they found Princess Louise wandering around her mother. She had a little path that all the way around where she'd been traveling all along. And they noticed that she'd been hit on the leg, so they gathered her up and took her up to the MO, the vet,
Medical officer.
He said, well, don't bring her here. He said, I'm an army doctor, I'm not a veterinarian. So they said, you better fix her up anyway. So he bandaged her legs up, and then from then on she became a mascot. They took her on everywhere they went. And they put her in the back of a 3-ton truck and put a bunch of boxes and stuff behind her. And that's the way they used to hide her.
Yeah. They had to hide her because they weren't allowed to have. No, they're not supposed to have any animals. So did she bond to the regiment right away? Is she?
Yeah, she loved. She loved the troops. She loved to go on parade.
Did she?
And she just stepped right out there and her head up.
She was a proud horse.
Yeah, yeah. And we all went through the head of the parade. Just the colonel was ahead of us, the only one ahead of it. And Princess Louise and myself, and then the troops behind.
Now, so she was found in Italy, and then she was bandaged up and adopted by the regiment. But then, when the regiment moved, you know, from Italy, they went through Marseille, and then they went on to Holland. They fought through Holland.
Yeah.
And they somehow smuggled her through. How did they manage to do that?
I don't think they bothered. After they got to France, everyone was so surprised to see her, they said. And after that, she just went along.
Yeah, they got her on a boat to New York, wasn't it?
So they went from Holland to England, I'm told, and then from there to New York City.
It was the British Veterinary Corps that looked after her while Hussars had gone. Colonel Ross got the bill for her passage. I remember typing up the letter he wrote, I have planned to pay for her passage, but not for the whole ship.
No. I imagine it was a pretty big bill. I bet you.
Look at my other questions here. So, Princess Louise was patriated to Canada in 1946. And then they made her a citizen of Hampton.
Right.
Yeah. Member of the Legion.
Member of the Legion.
Have you seen that plaque we were speaking of by the cenotaph?
I haven't. I'll have to go visit that. That's in Hampton.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's where she's buried?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And her daughter, Mark II, is there too.
Princess Louise II. So when were you first introduced to this horse, Princess Louise?
We don't remember, do we?
I can't remember.
We were still in camp.
And at some point you were asked to be the caretakers, so how did that come about?
Well, actually, I wasn't really a caretaker. I just looked after on the praise.
Oh, I see.
The caretaker at that time when I first got to know Princess Louise was Theodore Anderson. He was the range master, looked after the rifle range, and he had a little brick house up on the campground, right where the RCMP are, their station now, and behind the house was a little, well, I suppose it was a one-car garage, and that's where we kept the horse, and he fed her and kept her there, watered her there. And I would pick her up and clean her up and take her on the praise. At that time, mostly all the praise were right in Sussex.
Right.
Most of them.
We kept her gear at our house. We used to spit and polish and blacken and whiten before we get our own gear ready. Michael at that time was in the units.
Huh.
Shortly after that, but I can still see the three of us getting her ready and then getting ourselves ready.
Now, didn't Princess Louise also have another colt, Hussar?
Yeah, Hussar.
She had two sons.
Oh, she had two sons.
Yeah.
Hussar and Prince. Hussar caused quite a commotion at an officer's funeral right here in Sussex. Gordon had her. And I was just sort of general duty, I was driving a panel truck. The coffin was just being carried from the house to the hearse, and they came to salute, the old salute, and she tore off.
I went flying.
Gordon was boots and gaiters sticking out of the snowman.
I told the captain she wasn't ready to go on parade. I told Captain Miller, I said, she's not ready to go on parade, or he's not ready to go on parade. And, it'd be all right, you know, get down there. Just did fine till they present arms. And they slap the rifles. And he had the old ride boots in the stirrup backwards. One of them went flying in the ditch alongside of me. threw me right down the ditch too, right off the veranda. Oh gosh. And then away she went, right down the street, just in the gallop. Down this street, wasn't it?
School had just left out, and I thought, there's going to be little bodies strewn everywhere we go.
Right.
But no.
She was right to her
she
stable.
She went right to her stable, which is across the road there, roughly where Sharpus is now.
Wow.
And she'd gone right, he'd gone right home.
Yeah.
And somebody opened the door, please.
So that was Hussar, then there was Prince. And what
Prince
happened,
never went on parade. He didn't care for parades.
Yeah.
So. He just acted as a gentleman farmer. And then there was Mark III, who died very suddenly. We think she had colic and wasn't probably. She was boarded out in Moncton. Why, I don't remember. And we just got word one day that she died of colic.
Wow.
Which surely was unnecessary, because she'd been... When Mark II was dying, she was down, and the vet called us, because we were liaising and paying the bills and all that stuff, and he said, what do you want me to do? I said, well, is there anything you can do? No. Just make her comfortable. Okay, well, you do that. A little while later, he called and said, she's definitely worse. What do you want me to do? I said, well, I can't make any decision alone. So called right across Canada, and everybody said, well, you're there. You can see what she's doing. You can see what she's like. You decide. All right, okay. So I had to call the vet, and he put her down. And that night, a B squadron from the armors here ordered a harsh on track truck and loaded her, and we set off for Hampton. The truck was ahead of me. First intersection, the driver came back and said, you don't want to drive all the way to Hampton looking at her, do you? I said, no, I'd really rather not. So he let me go ahead. We got down there. It was supposed to be a secret, you know, no publicity, but there were people that already knew, were waiting to see. Another sad day.
And when was that, Mary? When did Princess
Mark
Elise
II die?
The 81?
Let me see. The brown book.
The brown.
There's a picture of the tombstone. Oh, well, this is Mary.
Oh, yeah, in the back.
We got glasses, but we can't see with them very much.
Mine, she was born in 54 and died in 81.
81, yeah.
My mother was 44 to 73. And Mark II finished up on a farm beside us down in Palevo. Mm-hmm. She was well taken care of. Army exercises in the summer. Mm-hmm. And one particular day, lady looking after her was most annoyed because helicopters and stuff were getting too close and spooking her. So she stopped the next vehicle she saw and said to the driver, "Can you talk to those guys?" "Yeah." I said, "Well, tell them to get that away from my horse. You're scaring them." And they left.
So how were you, Gord, how were you chosen to be the official handler of Princess Louise?
How long was that?
How were you chosen to be the official handler?
Did I find somebody else? Well, I was
wrong time, the wrong place.
Yeah. Yeah,
that picture of the two children on her back. I opened the mail up there in the order room one day, and there was my kids. How'd you get them? They had kept it a secret, little as they were, and it had the princess's picture taken and then theirs, which was a nice surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a photographer came down from Fredericton and he took these pictures. And I said, well, just one don't say anything to Mary when they come in, and she'll be surprised. She opened the mail one day,
and
there they were.
Later in life, it was a toss-up who went to sleep first on parade, the princess or Gordon.
So the mascot was a very much of a beloved mascot for the regiment, and a bit of a notorious character. Can you give some insight into Princess Louise's character?
She just loved to be where the troops were. She always liked that. And after the parades, lots of times, I used to walk her around and let little kids get on her back. And now these little kids are grown up and they're married and everything, and every once in a while, one will pat me on the shoulder. She's, "Remember the day I was riding on a little horse?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was good with children too, was she?
Yeah. Pardon me?
She was good with children. The horse.
Yes, she liked children.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But her first love was anybody in Corky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she used to like to go on parade.
Yeah.
But she kind of,
you know, the band strikes up and she's all alert.
Would square her shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I understand that sometimes she'd be get a little tired of parade and just decide to go home. No?
No.
Okay.
It was Mark II that we gave Mark II to the regular regiment that was in Geisha at the time. She hadn't been there very long and she got loose and scattered another regiment's parade. She left a deposit on the CO's. That was Mark I. Yeah. Left a deposit in the CO's office floor. She loved to go in the mess. There were pictures of her going up the steps into the mess.
And I suppose the troops would give her something to eat,
whatever
something to
she
drink.
Wanted.
Whatever she wanted, she got. So what did she like to eat? She liked certain sugar cubes. And
just about anything except cheese. She wouldn't touch cheese.
Yeah. She liked cigarettes and
cigarettes. Put a cigarette in your mouth and she'd take it. Take it right out of your mouth.
She goes, "I'll have that."
She'd count her age.
Yeah,
how old she was, and she'd count that off.
How would she do that?
Yeah.
She would stamp her foot the requisite number of times.
And I was pat, I was doing the, that. Like,
her handler was helping.
I do that. Then she'd puff. I do get puff.
You would indicate on the side how many times you
helped.
You're pretty smart,
horse. Yeah.
So, Gordon, can you retell that story about when it was her birthday and you, the sergeant's mess made her a cake?
Oh. Didn't I tell you about that?
You did, but that recorder wasn't on, so I'd like for you to tell that recorder.
Well, Sergeant Duguay was our chef at the sergeant's mess, and he made this beautiful big cake, and he frosted it all nice, nice and all over, and then he put carrots on for candles, and he brought the cake down in a box to me down at the tank hangar. All the troops were lined up, all on parade, and they said, "No, present this to Princess Louise." So I took the cake out of the box and held it in my hand like that. And I said, "Princess Louise, your birthday." And I said, I don't know what I said, but yeah. It's your birthday. And she looked at me, and then she looked at the cake, and she just drove her nose right down to the perimeter to her eyes, and not almost knocked me over, cake and all. And the kids, the troops, they laughed. They just thought that was the greatest joke. Well, it was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was. She's quite a character. She just loved to be with it where the troops were.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed taking her out. And lots of times on these parades, and the old general would be interviewing the troops going around the rank and talking to some of the boys. And I feel her nodding her head, she's fallen asleep. I pull down her ear, "Princess, wake you, wake up, you're going to sleep." She'd brace herself up. I think sometimes I was pretty near asleep too. It's a hot day in the summertime,
It was khaki uniforms, the old
sun, sun just beating right down that old parade square, you know. Some hot, yeah.
Wow.
And the old bandmaster, what was his name, Mary?
Charlie Estabrooks.
Charlie Estabrooks. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a great big drum, and he just waiting to get to the sergeant's mess for a drink. As soon as the parade is over, he made right for the sergeant's mess. Yeah.
So did the horse often come into the mess after these parades?
Some of them came there. Some the officers went to the officer's mess, and the sergeants and corporals came to the corporal's mess, sergeant's mess. Yeah. So it was so much fun right after the war. We seemed to be all so young and happy then. Now I'm so old, I don't know anything. I don't know. But I had a good life. And I enjoyed working with them. I enjoyed their company. I just wish I could turn the clock back to those days again.
Yeah. Now, Princess Louise, you were talking earlier, that was Princess Louise II, right? The one you were referring to, the death of the, when she was low and the veterinarian called you. Was that Mark I or Mark II? The story you just relayed a few minutes ago when you were talking about the veterinarian calling you.
It was 81, wasn't it?
81, so that was...
It was summertime.
Yeah.
I remember the date.
And so, Princess Louise, number one, died in 73. Did she just die of old age, or how did she...
I guess
pass?
So, yeah.
She was a good age.
Yeah. I don't know how long... Was she
29 when she died?
She was born in 43.
Quite a long while for a horse, yeah.
And died in 73.
29.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they
ever
played. Yeah, she had a for a horse. She had a pretty good long life.
I don't think they ever gave her an official birthday.
No. Yeah.
You know, the Dutch people wanted to give the hussars a gold medal or a piece of gold in gratitude. Couldn't do it because the Germans had the gold.
Right.
But when they could do it, they did. And their ambassador came to Camp Sussex. Now, I think that's the same day as the birthday. Seems to me we went from O'Connell Park back to camp and had the birthday.
Mm-hmm. One of the people that conspired to smuggle out the horse out of Europe and back to Canada was Colonel Ross.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so he had a major hand.
He was the he was the main instigator of getting her back to Canada. That's for sure. Yeah, he was a go-getter. He wanted something, he'd get it, no matter how, but he'd get it, no matter what.
So now you knew Colonel Ross because you served with him, and can you talk about the day that Colonel Ross died?
Yeah, I can remember the night before. Mm-hmm. We were all up at the sergeant's mess, and Colonel Ross was there, and he got pretty tight that night.
It was a closing banquet for a course of some sort.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Corporal Mullet and myself drove the colonel back to Hampton because we just didn't think he was fit to drive.
Yeah.
So we drove him back. And the next morning, Sergeant Mullet called me and he said that, "You'll never know what happened last night." "No." I said, "What happened?" He said, "Colonel Ross died in the night." Yeah, I couldn't believe it. He was so lively the night before. Just the life of the party, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess it was a heart attack that took him.
Mm-hmm. We served under 7 COs.
Really?
Quite a few.
Yeah.
Normally when you leave a post like that, somebody says, "Oh, well done," or "Sorry to lose you," or so on. But not the CO at the time. He said, "Now what are you going to do with your spare time?"
Not a very good send-off.
Not very gracious.
No. So, Colonel Ross sounded a little bit more of a gracious type for you.
Oh, yeah, you got a few compliments on it.
Yeah.
Then there was Howard Caistus. Bless his heart, he was 2IC for ever and ever. Mm-hmm. He always had food in his desk. He'd shut the door and open this bottom drawer, and he'd have all sorts of good stuff. Smoked oysters and
canned oysters, mostly. Canned oysters and stuff like that. And crackers, He always had a bottle of vodka, too.
Never offered the girls the vodka.
No.
Chase you around the desk a few times and
I had a few drinks with him.
Of course, Lord Brown went missing one night, too, didn't he?
Who's that?
Lord Brown.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Lloyd, he went missing there. Captain, was he captain then? Captain Brown, I think. He went missing. He had all the troops out looking for him. Looking under culverts on the highway, and what happened to him anyway? I forgot. What was the end of the story?
He just wanted to lose himself. He wanted no more of this. His daughter said he couldn't live like this. What she meant, I don't know, but he must have been very unhappy about something.
Huh. Yeah, a bit of a nervous.
Did he commit suicide? What happened? I forgot.
He died. It's a toss up whether he committed suicide or just died naturally.
Yeah, I got it.
He was a nice man, too. Mm-hmm. A lot of nice people in the regiment.
Oh, there were.
But look, in the past year, we've lost Tim Ellis, Ron Ferris, Kit Graham. Huh? Who was the other one? Mike Reed was gone. The old school was.
Passing
one-room school now.
Yeah, aren't too many around anymore.
Yeah.
We're wondering who's going to turn the lights out for us. We go to quite a few Legion tributes all the time. Mm-hmm. And you look around and who's going to be next? It's going to be one of them.
Yeah. Mary, you were saying on the phone, I was talking to you about, you were reminiscing about the funeral for Colonel Ross.
Oh,
you said it
yeah.
was a little bit like something out of the Crimean War.
Yes. It was snowing and blowing. The boots and the stirrups reversed, and a good contingent of hussars. And looking on from the side, you could imagine you were watching a movie about the Crimean War. It looked so, well, it was real, but I mean, it almost looked staged. He was buried in that little cemetery up by the curling club in Hampton.
Yeah,
was the whole regiment out for that?
Snowy and rainy all day, wasn't it? It was kind of snowy and rainy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was the commanding officer at the time?
Yeah.
So they had the
Four
entire regiment
military
owners. Was there. Yeah. A sad day when that
yes.
happened, because he was a very young man. I mean, he was just in his 40s at the time.
Yeah.
Bit of a shocker.
Yeah, it was. It really was a shock, all right. I don't know. I don't know where the time has gone.
It does slip by quickly.
It
seems to accelerate as you get older, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Gordon Mary, thank you very much. I'll just turn this off. But I thank you for your time. I know you get interviewed a fair amount. You're probably getting tired of people coming around asking questions.
I'm afraid you don't remember very well.
It gets busy in November when history teachers will send people down
yeah.
to go off. And you play off each other, something that will remind Gordon of
yeah.
and then me.
After you leave, we'll come up with some stories like that. Yeah. We always should have told them that story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry, didn't do better.
Oh, he did great, thank you.